Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Ukrainian Football Podcast. I'm Adam from Ukrafoot24, and a big thank you to Stell once again at Shooter Defence for giving us the opportunity tonight. I'd like to very happily welcome back Andrew. Good evening.
Hi there, back from Kyiv. Lots to talk about.
And once again to the King of North Kyiv, Ray. Great to have you back with us.
Great to be here, guys. Good evening and plenty to discuss today.
And I'm very happy tonight to welcome Pasha. Pasha's Kyiv-based and from Vinnytsia originally, and we're going to have a long chat about Vinnytsia football later this evening. So, Pasha, welcome.
Thanks.
So, starting off, yeah, it's been a long time since we've had some domestic football. The international team have been very busy the last 10 days. Andrew, as you said, you were over here reporting on the games. How was your week?
Well, great to finally meet the rest of the pod crew in person. That was our first point of call. Obviously, oversaw the France humiliation 7-1 in the comfort of my hotel room, which was not the best start to the trip. But following that, it slowly picked up. Ended up going to see the under-21s play Romania in Oberlin. Some standout performances from Gio Titashvili, Ilya Shevtsov and Buletsa, all impressed. 1-0 win thanks to a Buletsa penalty. And then, you know, it looks like Rotan has got something going on there if he puts his mind to it. But then in the second game, the under-21s actually lost to Northern Ireland 1-0. So who knows what's going on there. Hopefully the next qualifying campaign will come better. Following that, was the Germany game. So Ukraine had amends to make after that sort of France defeat. And obviously we all know about the injuries and the COVID problems. However, despite Ukraine being sort of improved in their performance, a lot better than the stats suggest, I'd say, sort of watching. However, they were pretty poor going forward. Yaremchuk was rather isolated, run his socks off, but sort of no real cigar until he won a penalty late on. However, the game's probably most going to be remembered for Bushjan's howler, which sort of undid his heroics throughout the game, where he had a great sort of performance, but then Goretzka clattered into him and he flapped, and 2-1, unfortunately. So it wasn't the best. It was Ukraine 3 losing on the bounce, and who knows what was coming next, really, with Spain. And we knew what happened the last time. Luckily, it was a historic win. Almost a year on, like, I think a year to the a day ahead from the Portugal win, Ukraine pulled off another sort of Portugal-esque performance where they were resilient defensively, missing their three starting midfielders in Stepanenko, Malinovsky and Zinchenko, and they still managed to get a great win against Spain. Props to Bushjan. He turned from sort of boy to man over the course of a week, letting in 7 against Spain, howler, and then pulling off probably a man of the match performance, which means after just 2 games in the competition, he's the leading saves. He's got the leading saves in the competition for the Nations League. And Tsikhanov got the winner. So he's sort of showing what he can do when he gets a bit of game time. And, you know, who knows what's coming next in November. Ukraine have got 2 games left in the Nations League, Germany and Switzerland away. And, you know, there's still every possibility that they could even top the group. But, I mean, that's being a bit positive. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, I guess.
Andrew, can I ask you, what was the atmosphere amongst the media over the week towards the national team?
So it was sort of quite, you know, downbeat during the Germany game beforehand. People obviously realized the consequences of, you know, the COVID issues, the injuries, the impact was going to have on the team. However, literally following the game, there was clapping, rounds of applause when Shevchenko walked into his post-match interview following the Spain win. And I think, if anything, it sort of showed Shevchenko's growth as a manager himself in sort of some of the things that he came out with following that match, saying that he, you know, he knew that he got it wrong in those earlier in that earlier match against Spain, and he sort of turned it around tactically in this one. So I guess time will tell what will happen in the future.
Sorry about that there. Microphone tripped a little bit. Ray, obviously, as Andrew touched upon there, our dear coach Shevchenko did come in for a little bit of criticism prior to the Spain game with his lack of flexibility with his tactics. Do you see the way the Spain game panning out as kind of a benchmark for how the team can progress forward going into next summer's tournament?
Yeah, I would agree with that. First of all, I would recall the Shevchenko press conference 2 years ago in March 2018 when he said that we play the same football with every opponent, with the top team or with you know, the team with the same class or lower class or lower division than Ukraine. Friendly match, official match, doesn't matter. So this is not what we saw with Spain. Obviously, he made some changes to the build-up, and the key word was compactness. Obviously, if you saw the game or if you just watched the highlights, you can see that every player of Ukrainian team just turns around every single second, just watching who runs behind and following the Spanish players all over the pitch, and the lines being kept really narrowly, and you could see that the possession was totally on Spain's side. But as Andrew said, it instead doesn't show a full picture in this one, because this was one of benchmark matches of Ukraine when we fought as Shevchenko said. We didn't battle, it was a fight, and we won in the end. And this is something to show that Shevchenko can try our other options than just control the ball and try to play dominant, and that he's flexible, and that this national team, sorry, has much more future than we would expect from their change of style previously.
Yeah, Pasha, I see you nodding there to Andre's words. Do you agree with what he was saying there?
All right. So basically, yeah. What I wanted to mention is that, like, I don't know even what to start with, because, like, you know, it's actually the game against Spain. Yeah, I can call it nothing else. It's like something like iconic, because it's like some for me. It's like was the because you know, I won't use any like terminology which is like really like going depth into football, like, you know, but like I'll tell you only what I think about it. So basically, look. We are playing in the team, yeah, whose total value is basically like 10 times more than Ukrainian's national team. Only one on Sufati cost like all our team. Guys, that's something that just impressive. And, you know, I got really impressed with the game that guys showed, especially the defensive line. As you may see, the Karavayev, yeah, of course, used to play as a right back. I would never believe that Karavayev would like actually stop like any winger of national team of Spain. But as I saw, the blocked shots, the tackles, the everything, it was like on the top level. Another point I want to make is that Shevchenko basically is a guy who obviously is a legend for our football, but he's only on the start of his path of being a, like a coach. And as like in my opinion, I think that Shevchenko is making his first steps into the category of the, you know, of this like of the big guys, because I think that like last three games that we were playing against Spain, Germany, and France, it showed one really interesting, you know, I saw one interesting pattern. So basically against France, yeah, it was like Dunkus. It was obvious since we were playing with an 18-year-old kid, like in center, like a center defender, how the players were like, you know, we had 45-year-old guy like on the bench as our coach. So yeah, it was pretty obvious. But like the point I want to make here is that Shevchenko had no choice to lose all three games, because if he would lose all three games, we would not be able to talk about him as a top manager and as a person who wants to achieve something like, you know, bigger than just training one of the best teams in Eastern Europe, but still only a national team of Ukraine. So I think I'm done with my commentary on this, on the following thing. The micro, yeah.
Thank you, yeah. I guess. Schoolboy error. I've been making a few of those recently, guys. What was I going to say? This is what I was going to say. Now, moving forward, and with all the injuries and the COVID and the like, decimating the squad at times, who do you think has really stepped up to the plate? I'm going to ask all three of you this, so just get your thinking caps on. Out of the guys we've seen step up over the last 2 weeks, who do you think's now cemented a place in the first team that perhaps wasn't in the thinking 6 months ago, shall we say? Okay. Ray, I've seen you turn your microphone on, so I'm coming to you first there.
I would say Zabarny, actually, because he is really impressive. He, and as we know now from the interviews which came out after his successful debut, well, not successful debut, but a great match overall with three top teams of European football. He's a modest guy, and this is positive. And he showed some mature level, I would say, of game. So I would vouch for him in future matches. Obviously, he's an emergency option, but I would keep him.
Thank you. Andrew, anyone pop up in your head?
I mean, he wasn't that impressive across the whole of it, but in these cameo appearances against France and Spain, I think you'd have to say Tsahankov probably has to cement his place as that new left wing for Ukraine. Konoplyanka's passed it, and I don't think there's anyone else of that sort of quality. Maybe Zubkov, he did impress, and he can play during those matches where it's going to be difficult from the start. You know, he'll give that energy, etc. But I think just with Tsahankov's game-changing moments, it'll probably have to be him coming through as a more of a permanent fixture in the future.
Thank you. Pasha, over to you.
All right, so I guess it's going to be also Zubkov, since I'm going to be also I won't be talking a lot, since look, Zubkov, even if he like went as a substitute on the game with Spain, yeah, I got impressed with, you know, with his movement, with the way he's, with his passion. This is the thing which is the thing that makes us special among all the other teams. Since Ukraine, we play really, really passionate football. This is what differs us from all the rest. And to be honest, I remember that Zubkov had one like really great attempt in the end of the game. We could have been started talking that Konoplyanka will like just basically end up his career in national team. If Zubkov would have scored that, I think Konoplyanka will be just like out of the score, because that's what I think about it.
Fantastic. Well, anyway, moving on, we've got lots to get through in the show tonight, and a week of European action ahead, and we've got a special edition coming out on Thursday previewing the Zarya's trip to Leicester. But Shakhtar and Dynamo start their European group stage campaigns off this week. Shakhtar warmed up for it with a home match against FC Lviv. Now, some people may argue that it gave them a chance to rest and conserve their energy. Others have said perhaps taking on these opponents will leave them maybe undercooked going into a difficult trip to Madrid. Either way, it was a dominant performance for Shakhtar. They were 4-0 up very, very early on. For me, personally, the standout goal was Stintinho's, the third goal, with some great interchange on the edge of the area there. I saw some very clever passing. And to lead Stintinho with one of the easiest chances of the game. Someone else who impressed for the first 20 minutes for me was Kovalenko, who unfortunately got injured, scoring his second goal. Two goals early on there. Did very well. It was a shame he had to go off. I know from the smiles on some of my colleagues' faces here, he's somebody that's a bit like Bovril, isn't he? You either love him or really hate him. And I've read comments on Twitter that were not very pleasant, to put it lightly. All of the goals were top quality, I felt, from Shakhtar. There was some very good football throughout the game. Second half, they kind of packed up and just kind of relaxed. It was great from a personal perspective to see Vakula make his first appearance, Vlad Vakula, one of my favourites since his operation in the summer. So it's great to see him starting to come back to match fitness. I noticed when he came on, it gave Dodo a chance to push further forward, as with Vakula's defensive tendencies, giving that kind of protection out on the right wing. Also, Marquinhos came on in the second half as well to get a bit more game time there, which was good to see. And Trubin started in goal again. Had a fair number of shots. Lviv had 14 shots. I was amazed to count during the game. They actually beat Shakhtar in the shot count, which once again shows that statistics do not give the full truth to a game. Because let's be honest, Lviv were pretty awful, FC Lviv. Defensively, they were disorganised. If anybody who didn't see the game tunes into the highlights, you'll see the first couple of goals, which were scored in, I mean, the first four goals all came within the first 20 minutes of the game. And the defence had gone AWOL. There was four on threes at one stage. You saw the two centre-halves having to take on five Shakhtar attackers with no sign of the full-backs or any holding midfielders. I think the coach had given up after the third goal getting. There's a cracking shot of him throwing his clipboard away in disgust at what was going on. I spoke about them 2 weeks ago after the Lviv derby, and I said then that Ruch and Lviv are my favourites to go down. Lviv have shown me nothing this week to make me want to change that opinion. We'll come on to this a little bit later, guys, but there's been a lot of suggestions about the fact that the three promoted teams should be the three that go down, but I would argue strongly that FC Lviv are a cut below those three promoted teams and should certainly take a place in the Persian next year over any one of the others. Real Madrid warmed up for their hosting of Shakhtar with an incredible 1-0 defeat at home to Cadiz. I don't watch much of La Liga, to be perfectly honest with you. And when I saw the score and I decided to have a look into it, I was expecting to see the team packed full of reserves. And it wasn't, was it? It was pretty much the first team out there. So I'd be curious to see what Shakhtar face in the Bernabeu on Wednesday night. If it's anything like the team that went out to face Cadiz on Saturday, there's an outside chance of scraping a point. I mean, going to the Bernabeu, it's always an outside chance. But I don't think Cadiz would have felt they had a chance of scraping a point, never mind all three on Saturday. And given that, you know what the fans are like in the Bernabeu. If Shakhtar keep it tight and don't concede in the first 30 minutes, the fans are going to be on their backs, something rotten. And once that happens, as we see with football all over the world, any result is possible then when you've got the fans on your side in an away game, abusing their own team. Pasha, what do you think of Shakhtar's chances this week?
Oh, all right. So I guess that to be honest, I think the Real Madrid lose against Cadiz was just like basically something that happens with every good team. Like, you know, you cannot win like every single game. You cannot like basically show the same level throughout. Like, yeah, there are some like good examples like Arsenal like in 2005 and so on. But it's something like impressive. But it's going to be repeated in history. About the game. So basically, there are two main things that I would like mention. I'll stress my focus on. So basically, there are a problem for Shakhtar. There'll be a big problem to play against this kind of team, since Real Madrid actually they love to control the ball. They love to control the ball. Even if you see the last game against Cadiz, yeah, they lost, but they had 75% of possession during the game. So guys, it's not a team that will be like really that's not a team that will be like you know, trying to do any kind of counterattacks or like something like this. So as in my opinion, it will be like twice harder for Shakhtar, because Real Madrid is they're like good in possession just like Shakhtar, but better, and also they have really good like people in terms of physical conditions. And to be honest, I don't think Kovalenko or anyone else will have a chance against Valverde or Casemiro, guys. Like, come on, it's like you're comparing like bull to a, you know, to a donkey. It's basically something like incomparable. So I would really wish us to win. I would really wish us to win, but that's, you know, the level of the players, just like looking at the level and level of organization of the game and everything, it's just another level. So I hope it will be just like the last time we met, like it will be like 4-3. I wish it's going to be something like this, but we'll see, because we'll see. You never know. But I think Real Madrid, it's going to be like two goal difference, in my opinion. I think at least two goal difference, in my opinion, for this time.
We will see. Now, Dinamo were warmed up for their game with a trip to Lviv to take on Rock, didn't they, Andrew? How was that game?
It was actually a tough one. Dinamo ended up winning 2-0, but it wasn't the easiest of matches or even opponents. Hard fought win, if anything, if you want to sum it up. Dinamo never looked to be really struggling at any point during the game, but they were really frustrated in front of goal. Supraha especially had a really another difficult day at the office where he wasn't able to score. He had some great chances, hit the side netting a few times, but it just wasn't his day. Hopefully he can channel that sort of frustration and energy when they face Juve on Tuesday, but we'll see what happens. Tankov, once again, he started for one of the first times, I think, under Luchescu, put in a beautiful sort of cross come through ball for Depena, who on the half volley first time finished it, and then he ended up being part of the build up for the Rodriguez's goal at the very end, passing it over to Kedira, who ended up giving it to Rodriguez. So I mean, it's a match that I think Luchescu wanted to be over way before it actually came to that 2-0 in the additional time, so that he could give more rest to his players ahead of this match. But I think he just wants those wins at the moment, and I think it's giving good confidence. Another solid performance from the defensive line, really, but I mean, there wasn't too much to trouble them overall. Coming up on Tuesday against Juve, no Ronaldo, probably the biggest boost you can ask for. He's out with COVID, and Juve also drew their game this weekend against Crotone, and Crotone were pointless up until that match, first four games. So who knows what's going on? I had a look at the stats, relatively even match. Morata started up front. However, Dybala didn't play and that sort of thing. So we'll probably expect the better players to come in. for Pirlo. It's going to be tough, but I mean, one thing I know is that there apparently will be fans at the Olimpijski. No idea how many, but it's apparently it's been confirmed that the fans will be allowed to, on Tuesday. So that will help with the sort of atmosphere building up the team. And if Buschan is any, you know, can pull off anything that he did against Spain, then I mean, a draw or even a win, it doesn't seem sort of unfeasible at the moment.
Fantastic. And Ray, our final representative, Zoria, they hosted Kolos on the late game on Saturday. I know you watched that game for us. How did it go?
Yes, I did, Adam. As you mentioned previously, we'll have a touch on Zoria in our next issue, with which would be specific about them against Leicester. But for now, if we talk about the game with Kolos, well, we remember Kostishin, the coach of Kolos, saying that one of the teams is being killed on the pitch, but he didn't mention which exactly. And it seems like it wasn't Kolos in their past three games. As we remember, game with Mariupol, the last second penalty, which guaranteed 3 points for Kolos, as well as even earlier in September, their cup game against Prikarpatia, last game, last minute penalty. And with Zoria, it was Selesnyov who came back to UPL and finally scored a goal, which should add up to his plans about beating the all-time record in UPL. So, yeah, plenty of questions to be raised about refereeing in Kolos matches. And Kostishin after the game said that, well, I liked how we played. We played better than Zoria. He didn't say that exactly, but you could tell that he means it. And according to the results, Skripnik wasn't happy with it, and he was angry with the refereeing. He didn't show that, but once again, he just follow the mimics and acting on his face. It's unfortunate because he should have beaten Kolos, if you think about it, but Kolos resisted, and you know, it doesn't show any hope that and any positive side in his you know, arguing about the refereeing. It's not common for him. He should be showing more on the pitch. Kocherkin scored for Zoria, which is quite impressive for him. It's his second goal in a row, and he is the main impact source of impact for Zoria. Of course, they have Gladky. They have other other freshmen coming up on the pitch, but so far it seems like they lack creativity, and Kolos had chances to score, to be honest, and it was a equal game, and everything, you know, you don't know what to expect from Leicester game. It's going to be tough, and I hope Skripnik calms himself down, calms his players down, finds the right words, and let's just hope for his mastermind, which he is, as we saw from Dynamo game and previous ones.
Thanks for that. Andrew, I'm going to come to you very quickly because you've mentioned in the past about Zoria's signings. Were you surprised to see them given so little game time this week in the run-up to the trip to Leicester?
Yeah, I think Serhi Hrin came on for the final sort of moments to show a bit, but I don't think he did too much. And Syed Manesh didn't come on at all. And that's also with Khromov, who was out for the game entirely. So maybe he might be thrust in at the deep end on Thursday. But yeah, difficult to see. Not too sure what's going to happen on Thursday, to be honest. Leicester have got a lot of injuries, as do. And Zoria just, you know, in that sort of equilibrium. So I guess we will see.
I definitely will. Pasha, how do you see our boys getting on this week, Dynamo and Zoria?
Actually, I think about I think that it's gonna be a pretty let me just, I'll just try to find it out. Okay, so sorry, can you repeat the question again? Because I didn't hear it well. Because I didn't. Yeah, there was some. Micro, sorry.
Yeah. Done it again. How do you think Dinamo and Soria are going to get on this week?
No props. So as I remember, Dinamo will be they'll be playing home against Alexandria, as I remember, and
Juventus.
The Champions League. All right, no problem, because you didn't mention like where to go, because we're like, you know, it's all mixed here. All right, so about Champions League, actually, since I'm not a fan of Shakhtar and Dinamo either, like I'll try to be as neutral as possible. Actually, I would agree with Andrew that Dinamo Kyiv, they have pretty interesting, like they have pretty interesting squad, and also the only thing that will help Dinamo Kyiv, I think, in this game is their coach. Since Mr. Mircea, he's more than just a person for Ukrainian football. He's the man who just gave who gave a lot of incredible moments for our people, and I think since it was mentioned that Ronaldo won't be playing this time. I think we got a chance because anyway, Ronaldo, he's only one player. Yeah, he's like a master of his. He's a master, but still, he's only one player. I won't give any specific comments on the game since I have no idea how it's gonna go. Since as we know, Juventus had some issues with playing. Juventus had some issues with the last games. They had three draws in a row, and also I saw they pretty much they changed their squad really, like, and I got really surprised seeing like some like guy I don't even know on the left who was playing left back last game. I didn't even know who was the guy. So basically I think that we Dinamo has a chance since we got some people who already played in Champions League and who can show the results. So we never know. We'll hope for more. And going on for Zoria, yes, you think?
Quickly, had give us a prediction.
Yeah, okay, no problems. So Zoria, since they're going to England, I guess it's. The first thing that comes to my mind is like, you know, the game with Manchester, like they were playing back then. Oh, that's going to be tough, guys. That's going to be tough, you know.
Leicester or Zoria, who's going to win? Give me a name.
Draw.
Draw. Okay. I won't say, yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. All right, then. Moving on. The early pace setters of Orskla. They had a trip to Kyiv to take on Olympic of Donetsk originally, of course. And one of their early surprise stars of the season, Kane, was suspended for the game. And I felt it impacted on Orskla's performance. They went very defensive in this game and created very, very little, played with just one up front for parts of the game and then went two up later on when they were chasing the goal and only created four shots, of which two were on target throughout the match. Zahidi, he made his comeback, first appearance in a month, came on and later on in the game, and we got to see Dinamo's boy Cardbu. I apologise if I pronounced his name wrong. He got a start for Olympic. Didn't really show much. The game wasn't very, shall we say, top on quality, I felt. However, one moment of quality, I was really impressed with the goal. I liked, again, apologies guys if I pronounced the name wrong, Sherbak. His layoff for the goal, his awareness there to pick out the striker. You know, quite often we see target men lose their heads in the 6-yard box, but he played a nice pass for the finish. Volskla held on to get their 1-0 win. One final comment from me on the game, though, is Volskla do look like they're starting to lose a bit of that momentum that they started the season with. It's, shall we say, the optimism of the string performance from them slightly starting to disappear. Hopefully with Kane coming back soon from his suspension, it may improve, but there was another sending off towards the end of the game, so they'll be missing players again next week. But moving on, there was a slightly more interesting game, Andre, I hope, than in Alexandria. I believe it looked quite interesting anyway. How did that go?
It did. Funny that Pasha mentioned Shakhtar Real Madrid previously because of 3-4, exact same scenario in Alexandria a few nights back. 4-1 in first half and almost a comeback in the second. Plenty of send-offs, plenty of penalties, all because of, you know the man, Serhii Boyko, the legendary referee, who is, no one knows how, is a mystery for everyone involved, how he held on that for that long in the league since way back. Remember, we surely remember the Dinamo Kolos game from last season when just three penalties given away for nothing and Kolos lost. It's funny to mention Kolos again in terms of penalties, but however, quite a derby it was of Kirovohrad region. Alexandria had plenty of trouble in terms of COVID, 27 positive results, including players and staff. However, the Inkhlad boss refused to move the game further along the calendar. Neither did Alexandria. So it happened, and it was quite a match. Alexandria played really emotionally. They lost a player, a creative player, Luchkevich, one of the few who remained in the squad after the COVID trouble. Alexandria had to play reserves all along. And when he was sent off, the game really turned into a nervous battle. Inhalas lost a man in the second half as well. So it was 10 versus 10. And an impressive save by the Alexandria keeper in the last minute, which secured a win for the yellow team. To sum up, it was a good game, and not in terms of quality, and not in terms of twist of the tail, but of refereeing and some silly mistakes and emotion. Not the passion, I would say, just not necessary in football emotions.
Thank you for that. And Andrew, another one of my boys that I like to champion, Mudrick, he had a start again when Desna faced a difficult trip down to the Dnipro. How did that game turn out in the end?
Well, rather surprisingly, Desna really stunk the place up, to be honest. Dnipro 1 got their first win of the season. Convincing 2-0 victory against Desna. They were dominant from the outset. Got a goal, I think, inside 2 minutes. Nazarenko with postage stamp finish. Absolutely brilliant goal from outside the box. And then basically, Jovicevic has started his sort of new midfield three. And I think that's what's going to help them sort of rise up the table now that he's come in. So he's got Ikhnatenko, Pihalyonok, both of them on loan from Shakhtar, both sort of solid central defensive midfielders, able to shut up shop, which is something that Dnipro 1 have had serious issues with so far this season. You know, Kravchenko, he's about 50. And, you know, other players in there have just not been really cutting it. And then Buletsa in front of them, who really impressed for me, like I said earlier, the under-21s. And I think he should be getting his proper sort of starting chance now this season. So hopefully he can have a proper breakthrough. Dovbik got a penalty in the second half early on. And other than that, Desna were just a bit flat. Mudrik didn't do too much. He still looks very much like a bit of a boy playing in a man's game. He needs to beef up, I think, maybe a bit. And I don't know. I'm not too sure how he's going to get along carrying on in the season. However, the weird thing was that Desna were actually playing most of their starting 11 that they would normally play. They missed Khutsulyak, who was really good against Shakhtar. But overall, they had Dektaryov up top, who's really not much different to Budkivsky. Totovitsky started. It's just this transition after Filipov, who used to chime in with the goals when they needed most. He's not there. And it looks like it might impact them down the line. I mean, I'm sure Abakon is going to give them a big bollocking after that game. And we'll see how they adapt. But sort of positive signs for Dnipro 1, who, you know, might start climbing up the table now. They've got that first win under their belt, and Jovicevic was very happy. post-match.
I can only imagine on both sides of the coin. And the final game of the weekend was down in sunny Uzhgorod. Minai welcomed Mariupol. And the final one of the Shakhtar three, shall we say, Danny Sikan, he had another start for Mariupol, didn't he, Andre? And how did that game go?
That's right. Sikan had a shot at crossbar. He was close to scoring a goal. Well, I would say that he started just like Supraha back in the day. I mean, from a decent performance, but not good enough. And I would agree with Andrew in terms of Mudrik that Sikan is obviously needs to, bench a bit more or do some more squats in the gym. So, yeah, just to man up a bit. But overall, yeah, he's a promising lad. Talking about the game, they conceded the penalty, which was outside the box, following this vaudeville story of mysterious penalties. Actually, this match day was full of such occasions, and you can just make a clip of keepers' emotions after them, because they were so badly shot, so badly performed, and the keepers were so close to keep them out, and neither of them did. So in this case, I would say that it's a favor returned to Mariupol after Kolo's game, previous match day, if you recall the penalty, which was outside the box, obviously, as well. Scandalous, but overall, Mariupol deserved it, and they are keeping up in top of the table, and they're appearing to be a very promising team.
Thanks for that, Andre. And Ray, what's been going on in the Persia this week? Anything interesting?
Yeah, I would pick one story for you. It's about Obolon manager not being sacked to go on vacation, just proper substitutes. Pavlo Yakovenko, a former national team manager and a head of Dynamo Academy back from 2000s, which such lads as Aliyev and Milevsky, first of all, those guys came right through this academy. We know their careers pretty well, but that's what they started with. And that's the emphasis which is now in prospect for Obolon to bring up the lads from the second team and from our academy, and obviously win in every match, as Yakovenko said in his first interview after signing a contract. We will win every match. And this is pure dominance coming from him. So it's plenty to watch in Persha Liga now. It's going to be a whole new tournament, which is as exciting as it is now, with the Chernomorets and Metalist still leading the table, and agro teams fighting their way through. This is a new twist of the tale, and there's plenty to come. Follow Persha Liga.
Fantastic. And anything happening over in Western Ukraine, perhaps? Any presenters signing for football clubs over there, Ray?
That actually happened, yeah. Recently, Veres signed a famous vlogger, which is known as Trendets, a former journalist from Pro Football. And, his players are happy with his skills. They were expected to see less class from him, and Veres won the game without his participation. And that's one more reason to follow Persha Liga once again.
Fantastic. Now moving on to the Gruha. And I say, very happy to have Pasha with us this evening. Those who don't follow the Gruha, it's obviously split into two regions, helps with transportation costs at that level. In particular, we'll have a look at the eastern region really, really quickly. Pasha, we were talking before recording. You were telling me about you quite admire how Metal have been playing this year. Am I right, Pasha?
What I can tell about Metal is the only thing, since, you know, I'm a big fan of, like, you know, of I'm watching lots of stuff on, like, on our YouTube, and as I guess Ray know that there is, like, really popular vlogger Andrei Kolesnik, who is, like, who is the man I'm trying to look at, and I'm trying to take something from him. So basically, now this guy is working as an analytical coach in Nadal, and this is the only team I actually following through in Druha Liha, because they just signed Papa Guia, who was like actually a big guy like back then, playing for Dnipro, Metalist, and for all the big teams. Also, they have a lot of good players, like Fomin, who was on contract on Shakhtar but never played there, unfortunately. They have a lot of people who used to play in Metalist 1925. They have pretty good squad, and also they got a player who was, I think, is the most who is the coolest, the guy on like through all three leagues is Andres Ompico, yeah. So this guy, you know, this guy who is like 120 kilos, you know, just fighting on the left wing. It's just like really cool, and like really, it's just crazy to see like this kind of like, you know, combination of Ukrainian people and those kind of, you know, foreigners, and like all those people playing in second league, having the most points throughout all three leagues, all three professional leagues in Ukrainian football. And I guess next season is like, I really hope to see them playing in a first league and first time seeing Derby of Kharkiv. So I'm really happy to see it.
Fingers crossed. I mean, they've started off the season incredibly, winning all seven matches. They won 3-0 on their trip down to the coast to take on a poor team. Metalog, for the classic fans of, you know, the old school teams, Zaporizhia's Foreigners, they're in second place in the group. And Kryvbass, although they haven't played all their matches, they've got a couple of games in hand. If they've got the ability to catch up, top two from that league will go up to the Persia, with Tarija Simferopol doing well as well. There's going to be a number of old school teams reappearing, I think, in the Persia next year, we can only hope. Because when we look across that, the Western Group A, probably the most famous team in that league, Karpaty Lviv, and we're not going to go deep into Lviv tonight because we could be here till midnight and we don't want that. And that'll be midnight UK time, not Ukraine time, guys, before you start. It's still not looking good for Lviv's team. They were held by Chaika on Sunday, was it? Yeah, it was Sunday, and they're struggling down at the bottom of the league. The team's not looking all well, but all credit to their social media side, their marketing side, and they raised a lot of money for charity by advertising virtual tickets for the game. I believe they sold a few thousand and raised a fair few thousand hryvnia for charity on Sunday with that match. So well done to them there. At the top of the league, Uzhhorod didn't play. They dropped points, their first points last week. So Padilla from Kremeninsky have gone above them now on goal difference at the top of the division. Uzhhorod and Epicenter are a point behind. Both have a game in hand on Padilla. It looks like those three are pushing ahead. Dinaz still have from Kiev region, also have a few games in hand to try and catch up. But there does seem to be that little gap. And for followers of Druha, you'll know well enough that once the top teams pull away, sort of the golfing class really does start to show, and you don't see a fall away later in the year. When I first started following Ukrainian football and started looking back through history, Vinitsa Footballing Institute stood out, following its appearance in the cup final back in the 90s. And then when I started looking, it's fallen on slightly darker times now. Pasha, you're from Vinitsa, but I believe apart from being from Vinitsa, you've got a stronger connection to the club itself. Am I right?
Yes, I used to be on trial there actually like 2 years ago. I didn't get into the team since I was playing in another country back then. But yeah, still I have pretty good connection with the lads there. And like, so you're free to ask any questions. I'm going to be more than happy to answer like anything specifically, because I can talk about a lot of things.
So what exactly is going on? What are the problems there now in the Eva? Why has the club fallen on such hard times in your eyes?
All right, so basically I can... no, there are a lot of problems that are actually happening right now in Vinnytsia region and in terms of football. Right now the head coach of the team, Mr. Samovitsky, he's trying to build up a new team without budget, without any aims for the season, without anything. So basically, as I understand, they're trying to get in the good mission of giving the young, giving the young players a chance to play on the professional football. I can tell you one little story. Back then when Vinnytsia used to play against, when we were playing against Volyn, against second team of Volyn, one of my friends who is playing there, I will not tell his name, because it won't be nice for him. But he texted me after the game and he told me this thing. He told Pasha, I just got a ball. I'm trying to give a pass, but I see the striker going behind my back with my ball. So this is what's happening, because the boys are not ready for this kind of football, for this speed, for the, because almost 40% of the team were playing in the under 19 championship of Ukraine last year, and this year they're players of the first team for the second league of Ukraine. So of course it's nothing else than shocking for them, as I think. I can probably talk about, I can just tell about two players who look at and you should be actually following them through. It's Evgeny Kustuk, who is playing left back. He was raised and he played only in Vinnytsia throughout his career. But I think he's a pretty promising player going, he has really, in Championship of Ukraine, he used to play center striker, but this season he's playing left back. So this incredible transformation, I'm calling him always, I'm joking with him, but he's like Zinchenko, on every position he can play. And I think you can look at this player. And also there is one guy as center defender is Dan Fedoruk, who used to play in Shakhtar Academy. He used to play in Shakhtar Academy up to 17 years old, but then he had some problems and he finished his youth career in Metalurg Zaporizhia, under 19. So those are two players who are youngsters who can actually show their skills, I think, on a bit higher level than just second league. To end up with something, to sum up with something about Vinnytsia and about the team, I'll be really happy for the boys if they'll make it. I don't want them to, to do nothing with relegation, with to do anything like this, because they don't actually deserve it. I can't say it wasn't their choice, but it is a bit unfair that team where average. Average age of the person is of the people are is 20 years old, and you cannot actually play, and with 20 years old without any experience playing on the top level. So actually it's pretty hard to do at least something. I'm talking with the guys, they telling me, yeah, we're trying, we're training, coach is supporting us, everyone supports us, but it's more like a kindergarten, yeah guys, you can do this, go on the field, it's not what I expected. That's not what I expected from them. But I'm not disappointed. I'm looking forward to them to start winning and to give the result.
I hope so. You mentioned there about the budget and the lack of a budget. Coming from Vinnytsia, what's the feeling amongst the people in the city? Is there any interest in the team in the city, or is it kind of ignored
in general? I can tell you one thing, not off the topic, but still. So, for example, I'm also playing in one team in Vinnytsia. We're playing for the regional league, and last Sunday we had a game, yeah. And I'm also sponsoring this team, so it's my team. And last week we had on our game, we had 300 people, 350 people coming to our game, which is amateur championship. And we have Neva, where we can see 200, 250 people in the stadium. So basically, It's really, I don't want to say this, but like, this is the reality that people don't care about the team at all since from 2018. I think this team is going just down and down and down, and I don't know what, and like, you know, no one is interested in us. We cannot sign any sponsorship contract. We cannot sign anything since we are not promising project for any sponsor that can actually be interested in us. So this is not really cool. I know a bit more, but I cannot go into the details since, you know, there are something that should be in a club and in the city. Yes, and like, you know, this should be like inside of the city. But mostly, but what I can say, Vinnytsia is a special city in terms of having, you know, we like to, all the city got interesting because of the, you know, sparks. So when the team, when Niva became professional in 2016 back then, it was a spark, it was like a bang. We had 2,000 people, we had one of the best, you know, like fan group in Ukraine. A lot of people were coming to the stadium. Tickets they were sold out for every game. There was sold out for every game. Now, you know, now there is nothing left from that, and like, it's really actually depressing. And but I hope, I you know, but I hope for a better times, like, soon.
It's something I want to touch on with you. Obviously, Andrew mentioned one of Vinnytsia's probably superstar players that has come from the region earlier in Sagankov. Vinnytsia, whenever I talk to people involved in football in Ukraine, Vinnytsia's kind of singled out as kind of almost a magical place where footballers seem to grow in the fields. And there's a number of players in Shakhtar and Dynamo squads now that come from the region. What is it? Is there anything particular about Vinnytsia that helps develop these players?
Yes. It's nothing other than the professionalism of the staff of the academies, of Niva Academy, of Blochina and Milano Academy. So basically, there are two major academies in my city. We have Niva and we have Blochina and Milano. So all the, like, 90% of the people who are playing in professional football right now, they're coming exactly from those academies. There is no phenomena. It's only that Vinnytsia is like it's some kind of city where, as I tell you, you can have almost half of 1,000 people going to a motor game. So it's a city where like, we love football. We live with football. We have a lot of, we like, you know, we have kids playing everywhere. We have even like women team. We have men team. We have. Actually, we have everything. We have great potential, but people from above don't really care about our passion and about people being, you know, and about people being passionate about this game. So, and also, which is the most important, is a friendship. It's a friendship between people, between players. Because to be honest, when I played abroad, everyone from my city supported me. When someone went on a trial, we all support him. When someone go to Dynamo Kyiv on a trial, we all support him. We're really supportive to each other because we want our city to be known. Because I'm a patriot of my city, and I really want like more and more people to know my city. That's why I'm raising a problem of having lack of a budget of. All the financial issue. That's why I'm trying to raise, not because I want to show that, like, look at them. They're like bad managers or something. I just want to show that we need it because we don't want to. We want to play football. We want to show the results. We want to have a right to give attention in Ukrainian football. So that's what I think. So I think we have a potential. Yeah, we're gonna work on it.
I agree completely with you. I was at the stadium last year for the derby game against Polisia Zhytomyr. It wasn't the most exciting of games, but what really struck me was the community feel. The ultras were in a good mood that day, and we're supporting the team. But it was, you know, the noise was coming from all sectors of the ground.
everybody. It was a very busy stadium, and you could feel there was a passion in the city. And I'll say this to people who are listening. I know that we have people that come across to Ukraine to watch football matches, and Vinnytsia's only 3 hours on a train. So jump on the train, go down to Vinnytsia and catch a game down there, because you're going to get a great atmosphere down there amongst the supporters. And the whole club's a very welcoming environment down there. And so they need the support. Go buy the merchandise, which is always available outside the ground, and get your tickets and everything else to support the club. So, yeah, Pasha, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been great listening to you there. I mean, Andrew, Ray, you agree with us there? It's great to learn a bit about the club.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great insight there into something, you know, that we relatively overlooked, I guess, by the big leagues.
We definitely do. It's one of the things we like on our podcast, is to make sure the whole of Ukrainian football is represented. And we're going to finish tonight with one little snippet of information. You may remember back in August, we had Max from the Ukrainian Grand Up as a group come to talk about his book. And one of the collaborators on that book, Yuri, took a photo from a village match in Mykolaiv region this week of the winger taking a glass of wine just before taking his corner kick. And the photo went viral. I've seen it all over the world this week. And all credit to Yuri. Max, if you're listening, please give our congratulations to Yuri with that photo. It's great to see the real roots of Ukrainian football being shared internationally there. Right, guys, that's it. We'll say good luck to our boys this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with our regular review. Ray, if people want to get in touch with you, do you want to give them your usual spots?
Sure. It's Instagram, @OblonCasual.
Fantastic. And Andrew, over to you.
Zoria Londonsk on Instagram and Twitter.
And Pasha, if people want to get in touch with you about Neva, what's the best place to get you?
Subscribe to FC Grad. FC Grad. That's the place you can contact me.
Fantastic. And I'm Adam at @Ukrafot24. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. So it's been a pleasure as always, gents. Have a great 2 weeks and look forward to catching up in the not too distant future.